Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices of the Sacred Feminine for yet another Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in tonight, and my thanks goes out to Jenna Green for the use of her lovely music. You were listening to a portion of her song called Dance With Me. Well, I know most of you listen from the archives, but I still want to remind you and invite you to call in and comment if you're listening live. And that call-in number is 718-766-4662. Tonight I have a doubleheader for you with two guests. At the top of the hour, in fact, in just a few minutes here, I have for your listening pleasure and my Men and Goddess Summer Series, celebrating my year here on Blog Talk and my third year doing Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Carol Polk Runyon, founder of the OTA, or Order of the Temple of Astarte, dedicated to the revival of worship of the Canaanite goddess Astarte and her consort Baal. He's going to be talking to us about the bridge between magic and paganism. Then at about 7 o'clock, or roughly an hour, we'll switch gears here and get into another style of magic. I'll chat with Joyce Chapman, author of the book Live Your Dream, Discover and Live Your Life's Purpose, who was actually, interestingly, instrumental in my submitting that Oprah audition that so many of you helped garner over 500,000 votes for, you know, for our vision there. But because we have our two guests, I'm going to forego our What's the Buzz segment for this week, so we have the maximum amount of time for our two guests. So let's get right to it. I'm going to fill you in on Polk Runyon's official biography, as I do with all my guests, bits and pieces from his website, templeofastarte.com, and some stuff I picked up from Wikipedia. But before I do and tell you about his extensive credentials and life experience, I just want to say knowing Polk has been nothing but a pleasure for me. I met him some time ago here in Southern California. He was extremely helpful and respectful as my nonprofit organization was a fledgling organization and growing as we contemplated if we wanted to, quote, build a temple. And actually, one of the most beautiful and moving rituals I've ever attended was designed by him. It was a ritual with no spoken word, yet it was one of the most profound enactments, prayers, spiritual experiences, whatever you prefer to call it, that I've actually attended. I can't say enough about how inspiring that ritual was. And as they say, imitation is the best form of flattery. I was so impressed, and it was so beautiful, I attempted to recreate something like it with my own group, the Isis Ancient Culture Society, when we were still together. But all praise to him. He is the master. It was awesome. And one of my regrets is not having been able to attend more of his beautiful rituals because of distance and, you know, how it is, never enough time to do everything you'd like to do. So that said, let me also give you some of the specifics about Polk if you don't know him. He describes himself as a gentleman of the old school, which he defines as one who recites classical poetry to heartless beauties while wrestling alligators. He's lived out his neo-romantic philosophy as a captain in the Green Berets, a student of ninjutsu, a blue water sailor, scuba diver, and ceremonial magician. And if Wikipedia is accurate, he did military service as a paratrooper, and that gave him some background to write one of his novels, Night Jump Cuba. He, as I said earlier, he founded the Ordo Templi Astartes, or the OTA, in 1969. The Order of Astarte is dedicated to the revived worship of the Canaanite goddess Astarte and her consort Baal. And this is how it describes him. His flamboyant public persona formed the basis for the title character in the 1971 movie Simon, King of the Witches. We'll have to ask him if that's true. In the early 70s, Runyon, along with Oberon Zell, the founder of the Church of All Worlds, and Frederick Adams of the neo-pagan group Farifaria, was active in the Council of Themis, an early neo-pagan association that sought to link together the emerging Hermetic, Wiccan, and pagan organizations. He received a master's degree in cultural anthropology from the California State University at Northridge, specializing in magic. He became a Freemason and went through all the degrees of the Scottish Rite and the York Rite. He served as an officer in three active Golden Dawn temples, then founded his own church, the Church of Hermetic Sciences, a Hermetic order practicing ceremonial magic. So, Pope, does that about cover it? I know you have lots of books and DVDs and...
Well, I think we're off to a good start. Boy, I live up to that one, yeah.
So is that true that that you were the title, you sort of inspired that title character in the movie Simon, King of the Witches?
You know, Karen, I there's a part of me that would like to think so, and then but some of the things that Simon did, I wouldn't really want to take credit for. There's a very good, beautiful new production of it, a new DVD of it that's available. It's been remastered and put together, and they have a commentary on it. And the fellow that wrote the screenplay, apparently, he told the director, and he also told Andrew Prine, that he was the warlock. And of course, you know, with all the stuff that I was doing and Sarah Cunningham and all the rest of us that are kind of mentioned or appear to be in the film, I'm wondering where Haypenny was while we were doing his thing. But still, so I'll back out of it. I mean, if he wants to claim that he was Simon, King of the Witches, he can certainly do that, because...
Well, maybe it was a composite.
I think that's probably closer to the mark. It's probably composite. I certainly smoked cigars and carried wine in a paper sack and was doing a lot of the stuff that Simon was doing, but I never lived in a sewer and I never did an 11th degree.
Well,
and I never killed a drug agent. So
or at least you're not going to admit to it on the air.
No,
right?
No, I would admit it anyway. No, that's why I'm not so. But however, there are a lot. Simon, King of the Witches is a delightful film, and it's a look back on how things were back in the early 70s.
Can you get it on Netflix?
Yeah, well, you get it on Netflix. I think you can, but you can certainly get it from Amazon. It's for about $13. It's really a good one. I recommend it.
Okay. Also, too, you have your own instructional DVDs. You've got The Magic of Solomon. You've got The Dark Mirror of Magic. And then you have your books, too, Seasonal Rites of Baal and Astarte.
We have Rites. Let me just say this. We have
sure.
Rites of Magic, which has that beautiful communion service that you were talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know that I'm so glad you liked that communion service that we did, the silent one, and that's
it was awesome. I tell people about it all the time. It just totally blew me away. You wouldn't think something with no words could be so powerful, you know?
Well,
but
let me
it really
tell you
just how, spoke to the subconscious.
Let me tell you how that came about. We had years ago a member of the OTA. Who was also quite active in the Society for Creative Anachronism, John Leckie, great big tall slender guy that used to play John Dee out at the Renaissance Fair, and a long beard, and John was a very, very talented musician, and he was also something of a dramatist. And he told me, you know, he said, Polk, he said, your stuff is too wordy. You guys talk too much. Just get out there and do it. Make all these gestures and just do this thing and let the people that are watching you, let them imagine what it is you're doing. And that stuck in my mind, and I thought, okay, you know, we'll try this. Of course, poor John's passed away now, but he'd be kind of you know, looking over our shoulders saying, "Lee, I told you so." And it's true, but this is so we did this beautiful communion service, and it will work for any pagan group can do it just about. I mean, it doesn't necessarily it doesn't have OTA written all over it. And
so now say the name of the DVD that people could
it's
actually
called,
see.
Yeah, The Rites of Magic.
Okay, The Rites of Magic.
Yeah,
and they can get that on Amazon or your website?
They can get that on Amazon. They get it on Amazon. And I think Warren Crowley at Reality Entertainment, he's going to put it out into all the occult shops pretty soon.
Okay.
It'll be available.
Well, you know, some
yeah.
of the things I remember about that, well, obviously the silence. Was there some sort of music in the background, I think?
There was,
lightly?
And I when we did it at the
Gnostic Center or something.
Yeah, the little temple up in Hollywood.
Yeah.
We did it there, and we used a very, very famous New Age musician, her CD, and I don't want to... Oh well, you know, you can probably guess who it was, but we couldn't do that for the film.
Okay.
And so we had Merrick Hamer, who was a very talented musician himself, and he improvised on the organ and did a version of the OTA theme, which we use for our seasonal ceremonies, and so that's what we used in the film. Because that, you know, but we used canned music for the, you know, for the presentation that you saw.
Well, you know, one of the other things that stands out in my mind all these years later, because it's got to be at least more than 5 years, because my first book came out in 2005, and this was at least a few years before that, so maybe 7 or 8 years ago this even is, but
mm-hmm.
I still remember it. It's so vivid in my mind. Your beautiful Astarte altar. You know, at the center of the altar, the sacred shrine box
mm-hmm.
that she lives
yeah.
in,
mm-hmm.
that just was awesome. I'm wondering, I don't recall, are there pictures of that anywhere, or is that something
there
you really only get to see if you come to the ritual?
No, you'll see it in the Rites of Magic.
Okay.
And yeah, it's in there. It's in there a couple of times. And it shows up also in Dark Mirror of Magic too.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a very nice thing, and I think that one of the sad things about the demise of paganism back in the old days was the loss of these sacred Christians kept wanting to call them idols.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives them a bad connotation. They
right.
focus their works of art that focus your attention on the symbol. And granted, they did, of course, infuse those sacred statues with what magicians call fluid condensers, and so they did have an actual magical presence, but that's another aspect of it too. It's a shame that all of that, the Christians were so intent on getting rid of all of that.
Well, you know, don't even get me started on that. Then that's what the whole show would be about. And
yeah,
we won't
right.
get to Astarte.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I definitely do want to get to her. You know, why do you think she, I don't know, I feel like she's neglected in modern paganism. Do I have a distorted perception?
No, I think you're right. And I think the reason why she's neglected is because she was demonized. The rabbis and the priests were just terrified of her, and they demonized her and called her a demon, Astaroth, and she was one of the demons of the darkest, deepest hell.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons why. And they did this because they were afraid of her.
Well, do you want to just talk a little bit about that to sort of rehabilitate her? Because, I mean, I often think we have to do the same thing with Kali and Sepmet. You know, they really, I think people are afraid of them, but they're just looking at things through a Christian lens.
Well, yeah, I think so. You're right there. In the case of Astarte, what you have is a goddess of love and fertility and peace and natural cycle. She's another mother goddess, and she's also a lover, and she's kind of
Aphrodite-like.
In fact, Aphrodite comes directly from Astarte.
Right.
And all mythologians, you know, realize that originally there was Astarte, and Astarte is very close to Ishtar. But there's one thing I want to point out. Back in Melchizedek's time, the primary goddess of the Canaanites, the main goddess, was Anath, and Anath was a warrior goddess, and had some of the attributes of Kali, and she was a very, very savage creature. And we still have her in our pantheon. She's up in the Mars sphere and in the Mars chakra. But Astarte began to come into prominence, and as we moved toward classical times, Astarte became more and more prominent. By the time Solomon, some people say Solomon was mythical, but by the time King Solomon came on the scene, that was around about 800 BC, Astarte was the main goddess of the Canaanites. Well, King Solomon built a temple to Astarte. And that was his, in a way, his not-so-secret other religion. And, you know, when I got into magic, kind of backed my way into it, I was always interested in it, but back in 1969, I became terribly ill. I had an atrophied gallbladder, which they had misdiagnosed as an ulcer, and I was literally dying. I'd gotten down to skin and bones. I weighed about 145 pounds, and I usually weigh around 180, but I was jaundiced. I was a walking skeleton, and I was dying. And I was trying to cure myself with hypnosis because I thought this thing was an ulcer. And so I got a bit crazy. And that's when I kind of discovered or rediscovered this method of bringing up these goetic spirits in the dark mirror, and using your facial reflection as a point to start, and then it morphs into the spirit. And Baal and Astarte were the ones I started out with, and I was dying and staggering around doing this, and I became completely engrossed with Baal and Astarte, and I realized, of course, that she'd been turned into Astaroth, and Baal had been turned into Baal. They were both supposed to be demons, but actually they were a pagan god and a pagan goddess. Mm-hmm. So that's then when I came out, I had surgery and managed to survive and came back to some form of sanity. But I realized that while I'd been into this kind of strange world I'd been in while I was ill, I realized I discovered something, and it made quite an impression on me. And I guess you could say that I was, if you wanted to look at it from a negative point of view, you could probably say, "Oh, you're possessed by these two."
I guess
maybe I was.
Well, I don't know. I think I would say you became dedicated to them.
Oh well, if the fundamentalists want to say that I was possessed, go ahead, let them. I don't care.
Well, I had this experience that I wrote about in my book when I was in the dentist chair, and I really had the sense that the dentist chair became the body of Isis, and I was laying on her body, and her wings had wrapped around me, and I had my first auditory experience then. Now somebody would want to take the magic out of this and say, oh, I was just having a reaction to the Novocaine or whatever they had shot me up with. But you know what? No one will ever tell me that I was not having a real magical experience then, and communing with the goddess. And I believe she said to me, you have nothing to worry about. You have much to do for us. So call me crazy, but I think they reach out to us when we're in a time of need.
Well, of course, and so what happened with me though is that getting into it this way, I became acutely aware that this is King Solomon, and this is kind of like Kabbalah and kind of like magic here, except that it's pagan.
Mm-hmm.
And so from then on out, I had given up calling myself a Christian sometime before then. I was probably in a sort of an agnostic status before I got into this, and I thought, well, oh my gosh, this is really something, and I've got this whole Kabbalistic tradition, but it has all this biblical overlay to it. So what I proceeded to do is I canonized the whole Kabbalah system, and we hung on for quite a while. We hung on to YHVH. We hung on to it because the Golden Dawn used it, and all this, and even Crowley used it. So we hung on to YHVH. We figured it was okay. But then one night, we're having a seasonal over in Pasadena, and we had all these, this whole bunch of Hasidic Jewish folks all men, of course, they decided to visit, and we said, oh, that's great, come on. And so they all came in their black frock coats and their black hats and their long beards. But we were having a grand time with them, and we were just enjoying ourselves, and everything was fine until we got out in the hinge. And the deacon comes out and to do a pentagram ritual, and he cuts loose with, I'm not going to say it over here, with the holy name, breaking it down into syllables. And these guys just marched out, never said goodbye, never did, just all of them, all dozen of them, just as if they were, like somebody said, forward, and out they went.
So they were running away? Is that what you're saying?
No. They were leaving, all in step, marching out without saying goodbye or anything. Right in the middle of the ceremony, they left.
Because they were offended?
Yes.
Okay.
We continued the ceremony. We all looked at each other, what have we done here? And we continued. But then I got thinking about this, and I got thinking about it. I said, well, we're pagans. So what are we? Yeah. We stole their god.
So was that why they were offended?
That's right.
That's
their god. YHVH is their god. It doesn't. He's not a pagan god. He's their god.
Right.
And we realized that. At that point, I realized that. So that's when we realized that. And we got back. I went back into the Kabbalah, and I realized, hey, whoa, this is a graft on. YHVH is a graft on the Kabbalah. It came along in the Middle Ages. The Sefer Yetzirah, which is the first Kabbalistic book, sets up the whole structure of the Kabbalah. It doesn't have it. And what it does have, though, is three mother letters, Aleph, Mem, and Sheen, which represent the three of the elements, and then than Saturn in the middle of the cube of space. They had to use that for Earth because they didn't have four. They didn't have four letters in Hebrew that would do for the elements, so they used Saturn as the beginning of the physical universe, and that was fine. So we realized that the real, you know, the really potent tetragrammaton was Aleph, Mem, Shin, Tau. And, of course, we've added two letters to that Phoenician alphabet of ours, and so now it's Amashao, which is the same three mother letters with Omega at the end of it representing Earth. So we
you're talking probably way over the heads of some of my listeners who aren't
ceremonial. I'm in one way, Karen. Well, I am in one way, but I'm not in another. What I'm trying to say is that you don't have to. If YHVH scares you away from Kabbalah and scares you away from magic, then don't be scared, because all you got to do is just take it out, and the Kabbalah works just fine without it.
Well, now when you say YHVH, are you talking about Yahweh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
all
I
right.
am. You said that. Okay. I didn't. You remember John Cleese, you know, when they said, well, I don't care if he did say Yahweh, they came out with a big stone and dropped it on him. Life of Brian.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to make sure I'm on the
same.
All right,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is part of my, the Renaissance, and I've got it down here in our little outline here, I got it down here a little further, but in the Renaissance, men like Ficino and Campanella and Bruno and these people, they were pagans. These guys were pagans. Sure, they got along with the Catholic Church. At least they got along with the Catholic Church until Hermes got canonized or whatever it was. But these Renaissance magicians were pagans. They had a pagan revival in the Renaissance.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, I had John Lamb Lash on the show a few weeks ago, and
mm-hmm.
his theory is the Gnostics were really the pagan mystery school people. Do you think that too?
Yes and no. I'm going to say yes in the sense that they came up with the structure. The ascension structure. We ascend the spheres and we descend the spheres, you know, and this is this great ladder. They came up with this, and the Kabbalah uses it, and of course we use it. But the Gnostics had they were, for the most part, they were against nature. Nature was the enemy, and their philosophy was that we were all imprisoned on this prison planet here, and that we were under the rule of an evil demiurge, a god that had a not so bright and a not so nice god that had created was in charge of us. And that we had to get off of this planet, we had to get out of these bodies of ours, and we had to get back up to the great Father God at the other end of the universe. Now, the Christianity, especially fundamental Christianity, is just virtually straight Gnosticism. It's Gnosticism without the third degree. There's no mystery to the Christian Trinity whatsoever. It's simple. In Gnosticism, there's the distant Father God, then the Holy Ghost is the spirit that's trapped on the earth, and then you got the messenger who comes from the Father. He's the Paraclete or the Christos or whatever, and he comes from the Father, and he says, "Hey, you guys. Dad wants you to come home, you know, and you got to break loose here, and here's the formulas to do it, and so that's all. And this is the so-called Christian Trinity. It's straight Gnosticism, but the difference between the Christians and the Gnostics was they got rid of the third degree. See, Gnosticism originally had three It has three levels, the Hylix, the psychics, and the pneumatics. Now, the Hylix were the guys that they just, you know, they kind of the people on the street, and then the psychics were the ones that were really doing the work on the rituals, and the pneumatics were the ones that knew what it was all about. They had the third degree. Well, the Christians got rid of the pneumatic thing altogether, and they substituted faith. And basically, they did that because they didn't want an intellectual religion. They wanted a religion that they could, you know, they could control.
Manipulate the masses.
Yeah. So they did. Now, this is the reason why Christians hate the Masons so much, because the Masons have a third degree, and one of the reasons why the Christians hate the Masons so much. Not all Christians hate Masons, because there are a lot of Christians who are Masons, but there are the fundamentalists. They don't like Masonry. So Gnosticism has a patriarchal anti-nature quality to it. But on the other hand, Neoplatonism, which goes right along beside Gnosticism, Neoplatonism is pro-nature, and it's monistic. It is not this dualistic thing. It's pro-nature. And you take Neoplatonism and Gnosticism and you blend them together, and you've got the Hermetic tradition.
Okay.
So the Hermetic tradition has both aspects, but it also venerates nature. And the idea in the Hermetic tradition is that the fall is man falling in love with his reflection in the mirror of nature. When I say man, I should say man and woman.
Humankind, you mean?
Yeah, because Hermetic tradition is the great androgyny. It is not patriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
The Hermetic tradition is not. It does not have this patriarchal God. I don't think Gnosticism qualifies as. Sure, they were the original, they were the ones who sort of created the mystery, but then the pagan mystery schools were Hermetic.
Okay.
Before
I forget, let me just ask you, go back a couple questions about Freemasonry and also King Solomon and Astarte. So you feel that King Solomon was a worshiper of Astarte. I'm assuming that. Is that yes?
Well, yes. But then again, here you have to realize that we have mythical reality, and then we have archaeological reality. Now we don't know archaeologically. We don't know what Solomon was or wasn't or whatever. And the same thing with you could say with Moses. But the myth. So we have to. We have to, in this case, accept that the myth is what we're going to work with. If millions of people believe the myth, then that's what we'll work with. Yes.
Didn't the temple have all sorts of motifs inside that pointed to the fact that maybe they were goddess symbols, or is that just...
The temple, Solomon's temple itself. Now, here's the big point with Solomon's temple, and this is gets us back to the Masonic thing again. Solomon's temple was essentially a Phoenician temple. It was designed, it was built with materials and with a Phoenician architect and Phoenician skilled labor and Phoenician building materials, and all the building materials, everything. It virtually was a Phoenician temple, which Solomon paid for by ceding several villages to Hiram of Tyre, the king, the Phoenician king, and Hiram Abiff, the architect who built the temple. This is all myth now. Hiram Abiff was half Jewish, his mother was Jewish, and his father was Phoenician. So he was from Tyre, and he was a worshiper of Baal and Astarte. And of course, they all... You know, especially the kings and the higher Phoenicians, they all worshipped El and Mother Asherah of the Sea, which was above Baal and Astarte, Father El, and El means God, of course. Now, actually, the ten so-called lost tribes of Israel, they all worshipped El, too. That temple was built to El. It wasn't built to YHVH. It was built to El.
Well, I'm glad you're clarifying this, because I think most of us go through life. I know at least in feminist theology, you know, they talk about, well, the women were baking cakes to the Queen of Heaven while the men were inside the temple worshiping Yahweh. But that's not accurate either from what you're saying.
No. Now, I think, well, personally, what I've done, I have no proof of this. I do know, though, that later on in the Bible, you know, so we're back to myth again, there were several so-called desecrations of the temple where they moved in pagan symbols. Now, if you read between the lines here, this temple was a temple to El. And I think it would be a temple to El, plus if it was, then all of El's children would be welcome there, probably at one time or another. It probably served, it might have served several functions. The Kaaba, before Muhammad, peace be unto him, I'm saying that because I don't want to make anybody mad out there. Before Muhammad went into the Kaaba and threw all the little gods and the big goddess out, they had 360 little gods all the way around the side of the Kaaba, and then right in the center they had a great big goddess.
You know, I'm less than hope because, you know, when I go out and I give lectures about sacred places and I blow people's minds by telling them that the Temple Mount was not just a sacred place for Christians, Jews, and Muslims, it was a sacred place, you know, of the goddess as well, you've just given me more ammunition here, so thank you.
Well, it was a sacred place, but here again, you have to remember now that the Phoenicians had a balanced pantheon all the way down from El and Mother Asherah. They were balanced all the way down, and Baal Astarte and Anath and Baal they didn't have any female. The one thing Anath was pretty savage, but Mot and Lotan are both. They don't have any ladies, unfortunately. Probably why they're so bad. They don't have any women to
quell the savage beast.
Yeah, to quell us. Yeah, like I used to say about Father El, you know, he really didn't ride herd on anybody. He was very nice. He was compassionate, and he was easy to get along with. And he used to get drunk occasionally. And of course, he had Lady Asherah out of the sea to clean up after him. So he was much nicer than Yahweh. Yahweh, you know, was a bachelor, and he was an old curmudgeon, and he hated everybody.
Well, and it shows in the Bible.
Yeah.
Well, now the Song of Songs. Now, forgive me if this is a stupid question, but would you say that was King Solomon talking about Astarte?
I would personally, I think so. I think so. Or the Queen of Sheba, either one.
Okay.
And the Queen of Sheba, by the way, is there's a boy. There's you talk about a wonderful pagan archetype there, and we have worked her into our Craterapoa fifth degree. There is an opposite. There is an alternative Masonic legend about the Queen of Sheba running off with the architect and leaving Solomon in the bed. But the Queen of Sheba, Baltus, she was some lady, and so it's either he's writing this about Astarte or he's writing it about Baltus, one or the other. And in fact, the two of them are such great archetypes that it doesn't bother me whichever one it was. But one thing I will say about the Shar Sharim that is not generally known is that it is the secret heart of the Zohar. So the Zohar supposedly, according to, you know, what we've been told, until the Zohar finally became available for us to look at, what we were told was that it was just an extended commentary on the Pentateuch. Oh no! It's that, but the Shar Sharim is the secret heart, and you get that wonderful 22 volume set that Berg put out, and you'll see that that's the case. Get in there and that's a lot. So there's a lot of in the Kabbalah, there's a lot of paganism. In fact, Solomon in the Zohar, he goes, he rides Shumal, the mother of eagles, to the mountain of darkness and gets his magic from the fallen angels who are chained in the mountain of darkness. How about that one?
Well, that's some pretty interesting visuals and symbology there.
Yeah.
Well, I want to make sure I don't forget to ask you. I mean, since you were actually in the Freemasons, and I've never had the opportunity to really talk to anybody that's actually been a Freemason, at least I don't think I have. Well, no, that's not true, but I didn't ask them this question, so I got you. I'll ask you. Do you think the Templars just sort of morphed into the Freemasons, or is that just an accurate legend?
I would like to think so. I really would like to think so, but we have in and amongst our Masonic scholars, there are those who are bound and determined to try to disprove that.
Why
and,
is that?
They want to disprove it because. They just don't want. I guess there are certain people that just don't want anybody to believe anything about the past that can't be proven. And so we had this wonderful Masonic conclave that we had up at Stanford a couple of years back. We had to sit and listen at a beautiful dinner out under the stars and listen to this Scottish fella up there telling us, "Ah, this Roswell thing, it's about a baloney. There's nothing in there. You're just as bad as that. There are no Templars at the Battle of Brockenborn." And I'm sitting here, having dinner and listening to all of this, and I'm thinking, wait a minute. Why isn't he up there saying, well, they could have, and it's possible, and this might be. That's the way to do it.
He was speaking with too much certainty for something he can't.
Oh, hurt. Yeah, he was just absolutely convinced, and he wanted to convince all of us that, no, there's no Templars, no nothing, no. Come on.
Well, I mean,
we can
I don't...
have Templars if we want.
Well, and I don't know if this is within your realm of expertise, but if you can comment on this, because, I know you've studied all of this stuff. What is your take on the fact that, how some people say the Templars were keeping the secrets of the sacred feminine, that, that they were actually, that they had gotten that sacred knowledge from the Temple Mount? And, do you think any of that's, that's true, and that was part of the heresy, or?
I don't know. No. Here's what you got to look at a thing like that and look at it from the standpoint of what is it that somebody wants you to think here. Now, if we're talking about the the birds and the bees, the bee stung the bird had puppies. But if we're talking about that, sex magic, in other words, possibly. But then that would serve somebody's agenda, if that was the case, and so they might want to promote that. I think the troubadours probably would have more to do with that than really preserving or perfecting that sort of thing than the Knights Templar would. I don't know. You can talk about Baphomet and all the rest of this business, but I do know this, that most recently the Catholic Church has opened up their archives, and they say that the Templars were not guilty of sodomy and worshiping Satan and all that.
Well, so I never thought they were, but I thought maybe they had something to do with some of the pagan goddesses that they learned about on the Temple Mount.
They might, but then here again, as I said, this would serve not just this would serve not just a feminist cause. This would also serve a Thelemite cause too. See, so you don't know. who are we suggesting, and what are we suggesting it for? Because we don't have any proof, really.
Right.
I don't know. To tell you the truth, I don't really know how far, and I don't think anybody does, how far back that sort of thing goes. I do know this. The Queen of Sheba was a prominent archetype in Renaissance and medieval alchemy. Now that's something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this alternate Masonic legend of the Queen of Sheba and with Solomon being the sort of the klutz and the Queen of Sheba running off with the architect, I think this is
archetypal as opposed to
and this is something. Although it came up, it didn't come up until about 1840. In fact, we got it from a French esoteric writer, Gerard de Nerval. He went over to Turkey and went to a cafe and heard a professional storyteller deliver this thing in about five or six chapters, and wrote it all down and wrote it back and published it. And Rudolf Steiner picked it up and recognized that it was quite important, and Manly Hall did too, that I think has something to it. I don't know, how far back you can go with the Templar thing.
Well, getting back to Astarte, for any of our listeners who might want to get to know her better, do you have any recommendations where they should start or what they should do or how they can teach themselves or learn from you that reflection in the mirror magic that you do?
Well, that we have a book, we have a video too on it called, the video is called The Magic of Solomon. And it's a DVD, and it's...
But do you really tell the secrets?
Yeah, show the whole thing, and
okay.
How it's done, and everything. But then we also have a book that goes along with it called The Book of Solomon's Magic, and that you can get from Amazon, and you can even get it from Barnes & Noble. I just sent them four of them. But Amazon stocks it regularly. And that's called The Book of Solomon's Magic, and that has the whole thing, plus a chapter on Baal and Astarte and Solomon.
Okay.
And this sort of thing we've been talking about. And then also I would recommend, if for more scholarly look at this thing, I'd recommend that people look up a book by Raphael Patti called The Hebrew Goddess. I wouldn't be surprised if that's not on your bookshelf, Karen.
Well, yeah, I'm just thinking that, I'm just about finishing up Cakes for the Queen of Heaven, and I think that's one of the references in it.
Yeah, Hebrew Goddess by Raphael Patti. That'll convince you. I mean, that's very scholarly, but it's also very readable. It's not...
Okay. I'm going to go look. I got like about 2,000 books there that I'm going to eventually get to. You know how that is.
Well, yeah, but this particular one, because he deals with Lilith and Naama and of course Astarte and Anath and all of them, the whole bunch of them, so that's one that would be of particular interest to you and your thing. But I've got what I've been talking about is in the Solomon's Magic video and also the Book of Solomon's Magic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we probably have about 15 minutes left, so I still want to get to, I want to make sure people know about your radio show, and we were going to touch on Fred Adams, but what other points do you think are important that we don't neglect mentioning tonight?
What didn't we do here? Well, we said the heading of this was that we were a bridge between magic and paganism, And we wanted to point out that the Victorian magical traditions were patriarchal and Gnostic, which they were. That's the Golden Dawn and the OTO, both of them. And so what we needed when we started the OTA back in 1970, what we really wanted to do was have a pagan magical order. In other words, not to have all this patriarchal, Gnostic, biblical stuff. Well, you know, naturally it's biblically based, but this is pre-biblical paganism, using the Kabbalah and all the techniques of Renaissance ceremonial magic. Yeah, but from a pagan perspective, and with a, you know, with an emphasis on the god and on the god, the goddess as equal partners in this sort of thing. And so that's what we did. And you know, one thing I haven't mentioned that I had there in this bunch of points that we were going to cover, I didn't mention that the Sabaeans over in Haran. Haran the ruins are still there. Haran was a city from very, very ancient times, right between the headwaters of the Tigris and Euphrates River. Right
in Iraq.
Yeah, right. Well, it's in Iraq, but it's right across the... Well, actually, it's right across the border in Turkey now.
Okay.
But this is where the ancient Babylonian star cult, where they centered, and they stayed there for thousands of years, and they were the first astrologers and the astrological magicians. And then what happened to them was that they got, when the Muslim conquest started, this Muslim emir with his army rode up and said, "Well, you people have a choice. You can either be Christians, or you can be Jews, or you can be Sabaeans, or you can be Muslims. But you're going to have to decide what you want to be, and then I'm going to come back in a year, and you better, you know, tell me, because otherwise, if you don't, we're going to put you to the sword or whatever." So they said, "Well, they took counsel, and he said, "Well, gosh, you know, we don't want to be." We don't want to be Jews, and we don't want to be Christians, and we don't want to be Muslims. But what are these? Oh yeah, that's the Queen of Sheba. That's what we want to be. So they said, "Well, wait a minute now. This guy's going to come back, and he's going to want to see a book. And there aren't, you know, Queen of Sheba didn't have any books left. They're all gone after the dam burst, and that went, and that was the end of that. So what are we going to do for a book?" Well, they said, "Okay, we'll get the Book of Enoch, because that's biblical, and we can get along with that. And it's got all those spirits in it that come down, and we're going to teach everybody everything. So we can get along with that. And then, just to be on the safe side, we'll get the Hermetic treatises from Alexandria, which we already have over here. And we will have two holy books. And when they come back, we'll just say, 'Okay, these are our holy books.' And that's it." So that's what they did. Well, the emir never came back. But he had killed off or something or other. But they had made their, you know, they had decided that they were the Sabaeans then. And then they became the wizards and the astrologers for the caliphs of Islam. Because, you know, in Islam you can't do that sort of thing. But if you're a Sabaean, you can. And, oh boy, and so a lot of our Renaissance magic comes from this the Sabaeans. They were teaching over in Spain, and I'm going to talk tomorrow night about Picatrix, which is mainly derived from Sabaean material.
So what you're saying is a lot of the ancient magicians then are coming from this part of the world that now we sort of can't get past the fact is just this, in a lot of cases, this fundamentalist Islam.
Yeah.
Like the Zoroastrians too, weren't they? You know,
they had a lot of influence. Yeah, they had influence on the Sabaeans, on the Haranian Sabaeans. And the Haranian Sabaeans were very eclectic. They were very eclectic, and they were very progressive. but they were terrific astrologers, and their magic is all based on astrology, which, and of course, ceremonial magic, European ceremonial magic, has Sabean roots, and it's based on astrology.
Well, and I think that's interesting to point this out, because I think sometimes we get, we sort of forget to look back and see what these cultures in these parts of the world used to be like. I mean, I know whenever I show pictures of, goddesses from Pakistan, people can't believe it, or goddesses from Iraq or something. You know, they think it's always been the way it is now. And,
Well, look what the Taliban did to the Shambhala Buddhas. I mean, oh Lord.
Yeah.
You know, but let's don't blame the Islamic fundamentalists any more than we blame our Christian fundamentalists. Some of our Christian fundamentalists are just as bad.
Well, yeah, fundamentalism
it can be it's the enemy of learning, it's the enemy of women. It's especially the enemy of women.
Absolutely.
And yeah. It's a curse. Not just in Islam, but also in Christianity and in Judaism.
Oh, well, yeah, and because I'm an equal opportunity whistleblower.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care which book you worship. If you're oppressing women, you know, we're going to talk about it.
And by the way, that Bamyan, where the Buddha statues, they're reconstructing them. And that province where they're reconstructing those statues, the governor of that province is a lady, and she is a Sufi.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, Pope, we don't have too much longer. We probably got about 5 minutes. So let's go ahead and mention how folks find you on your radio show.
Yeah.
And okay. However else you want to spend the last 5 minutes here, whatever you think is most important.
Well, let's get our radio show is called The Hermetic Hour. And it's on the same station, blogtalkradio.com/the-hermetic-hour. And so 8 o'clock tomorrow, I'm going to be on, and it's a call-in night, so people can call in and they can chew my head on Franz Barden if they want to. I had a show on, I love Franz Barden, but I'm sure that the Barden people probably, you know, will have something to say. But then we'll be discussing Picatrix in between Barden calls. So if they'll tune in tomorrow night, I'd appreciate that. And
so Thursday's at 8 o'clock, you said?
Thursday's at 8 o'clock, right. Yeah,
8 o'clock Pacific.
Same bad channel.
Okay.
Gosh,
and your website is templeofastarte.com.
Yeah,
we say that again.
www.templeofastarte.com. We're presently trying to reconstruct it, so it's a little raggedy. You're going to have to look at it full screen, I think. But we're working on that. But thank you so much for mentioning that communion of ours. I'm so glad you enjoyed that.
I've been to a lot of rituals, and in all these years, it still ranks up there. It's probably one of the top five rituals I've ever been to. It was just incredible. I'd recommend people get the DVD, Magic of Solomon, you said.
No. The Rites of Magic is
Rites
the DVD
of Magic.
That has that communion. And, of course, next Thursday you're going to have Joe Carson on Dancing with Gaia.
I have to look at the calendar. I don't think she's next week, but she's coming up soon. And for listeners who won't recognize the name Joe Carson, she is the documentary filmmaker of a wonderful documentary coming up called Dancing with Gaia. Pope, what did you want to say about that?
Well, I just want to say that I've known Joe for we're aging, we're dating ourselves here. I'm no joke, by the way. I've known Joe for a long time. And this is her masterwork. I mean, this is really a beautiful thing. I mean, this is one you got to own and watch over and over and over and over again.
It's particularly important to you because your friend Fred Adams
he was my master, and Fred Adams was my master and my guru, and Joe's also. And so we just think that this is kind of a tribute to Fred, along with a number of other.
A lot of his artwork is in the documentary, and.
Oh yeah, right, and his beautiful artwork, and so and I'm in there too. I'm very briefly in there, up there on the Chileo, and in a blue robe with a red nose. It was about 0 degrees.
I'm gonna have to go back and look at that again. I didn't recognize you.
Gotta look real fast. If you have a black beard. I'm black beard and a red nose, and I get a little snow on my nose too, I think. Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much, Karen, for letting me visit with you.
It's been a pleasure. That communion ritual. I'm glad we had a chance to talk about that, and recommend folks go get that DVD, Rites of Magic, and look at it. It's just incredible, and I highly recommend the listeners go to your website, Temple of Astarte, because if anyone in this time, I think can teach them about Astarte. Probably the most authentic information, it's probably somebody like you.
Well, thanks for the kind words, and I think you're doing a great job. So I will sign off and let you get on to your next one.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and have a great show next week. Good night.
Okay. Bye bye.
Well, listeners, you've been listening to Poke Runyon, and I think I might have accidentally. Is Joyce there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, wonderful. So let me just finish that thought. I sometimes I can't do two things at once: work the switchboard and talk at the same time. You know, we don't have producers like real radio, so we have to do it all ourselves and multitask. But if you have been tuned in for the last hour, you were listening to an elder in our community, Poke Runyon, who certainly has. A lot of experience under his belt, and any of us can certainly learn from all he's accomplished and the body of work that he has on his books and DVDs. I didn't even mention all of his books. We have Seasonal Rites of Baal and Astarte, Magic and Hypnosis, The Book of Solomon's Magic, Secrets of the Golden Dawn Cipher Manuscript. He mentioned the Rites of Magic DVD. There's also the Magic of Solomon and the Dark Mirror of Magic. So check him out. You can find all of that on his website, templeofastarte.com, or I'm sure on Amazon as well. But let's go ahead and switch gears here. We're going to be talking about sort of a different kind of magic. And our guest for the next hour is going to be Joyce Chapman. And I want to tell you a little bit about Joyce. She calls herself a dreamer, a coach, a teacher, a speaker, and she's certainly an author. She's been involved in education, motivational training, consulting, and coaching for individuals and businesses internationally for more than 40 years. So she's got a lot of experience there she's going to allow us to dip into tonight. Thousands of people have achieved remarkable results through utilizing the structured techniques created in her programs and books like I have in front of me here, Live Your Dream, Discover and Achieve Your Life Purpose, a step-by-step program. And I mentioned this at the top of the hour, and you may have heard me mention it a few times. During those weeks, we were gathering votes for the Oprah audition, but this lady we're about to talk to was really instrumental in my deciding to take that leap of faith and, you know, put aside all the excuses we make for ourselves in our head, or as she helped me to see, getting in, you know, I was getting in my own way, you know, of achieving things that were important to me, or I thought maybe I wanted to do, because I would make up these excuses. And so when this Oprah audition potential thing came along, you know, I just didn't do that dance with myself in my head that I usually do. Shouldn't I? Should I? You know, thought of all the excuses why I shouldn't, you know, why it would be a waste of time, or, you know, and I had just been talking to Joyce, and Joyce was schooling me in some of these techniques she's going to share with us tonight, and it was because of her I just was able to cast that all aside and jump right in. And while, you know, at this point in time, we certainly were not one of the winners in the audition, it was such an incredible experience. I'm sure some of you were part of it with me. I don't regret doing it for a minute. I could tell, you know, the impact it was having on the community. You know, they felt like, you know, we were a force, and it made them feel good and empowered. And, you know, we don't know what seeds were planted with, you know, doing that Oprah audition. But like I said, in large part, I think I had the faith to just take that leap because of Joyce. So Joyce, thank you for coming on the show tonight and sharing with my listeners everything you've learned over the last few decades that can help them get out of their way, like you helped me.
Well, first of all, I wanted to ask you, like, what happened with the audition?
About a week or so ago, they came out and they literally did exactly what they said they were going to do. They picked the eight people with the most votes. Now, I knew going into it, the chances of me, you know, being one of those people were pretty slim, because some of those people already had a few million votes, because they had been collecting votes for maybe a month already before I even joined the contest. So we were just hoping that if we made a decent showing, that someone else would see it, or it would come to Oprah's attention. And, you know, we might not win this contest, but it might net something else down the line. At least as things stand in this moment, we were not in the top eight. I got like almost 600,000 votes, which is not
that has to feel good, doesn't it, Karen?
Well, it does. You know, it does. You know, to see how the community rallied for this vision, you know, because, I mean, look, so many of my listeners and the people who read my books and the people who are into the stuff I'm into, we are so hungry for quality programming. You know, we're so hungry for, you know, the stuff that we know to become mainstream, you know, and the idea that the stuff that we talk about and care about could actually be on television, I mean, I think that just set people on fire, you know. And I don't know, maybe there's somebody smart out there in radio or TV programming that will see this and realize what a fresh idea it is and how badly it's needed.
So we're
holding out hope. Something,
you know,
may still come of it.
Yeah, and as you know, because we have talked before, Karen, it's like my excitement is that you opened that door.
Yeah.
And I think so often people, you know, cautiously peek around the corner, and really it is taking the chance and opening the door, and you did it.
Just using this as an example, Joyce, you know, that might help other people. I mean, I'll just be honest. I had all the excuses. I thought, okay, am I going to look fat on the video? You know, I mean, camera is not kind to me generally. You know, am I going to look stupid? Is nobody going to vote for me? I mean, you know, you just automatically think all these things, and you stop yourself, and you help me see that.
Thank you. I'm glad. I remember I asked you something, Karen, you can clarify if you want to, something like I always ask, you know, to just kind of spontaneous, like, okay, are you going out each day as a goddess? You know, and I think we laughed, and I don't know if those were exact words, but, you know, you went, well, wait, I have to go change clothes or something, you know, because I live very much in the real world, And I am a dreamer, and I love to spark that energy in people. And as I said, we laughed about it, and I don't know if those were the exact words. And then I got the information that you were joining in the contest, and I went, all right, Karen.
well, yeah. Just to, so listeners will know, I think they'll get a kick about this. I just lay it out there. I don't, what you see is what you get here. I don't
absolutely
pretend to have any airs. I will sit here and do my radio show in my pajamas, I mean, I will go to the grocery store in sweats and T-shirts, and no, I don't have curlers, but, my hair's tied up in a rubber band and not a stitch of makeup on. So when you asked me, because so many of us into goddess spirituality, we care about beauty, of course, but, I think a lot of us also, too, don't want to feel like we're slaves to this, our culture or patriarchal ideas of beauty, So I think sometimes we tend to, just say, look, you take me the way I am, kind of a thing. I'm not going to get all dressed up because society says I should get dressed up. And so anyway, I was just thinking about those many trips to the grocery store where goddess I did not personify goddess, at least not in my clothing anyway. So Joyce, just to sort of start at the beginning for our listeners, all right, so your book, Live Your Dream, Discover and Achieve Your Life Purpose, how did you come to write this? I mean, what inspired you? How do you have the sacred knowledge?
I don't think I've ever been asked that before. I love it. What I always have known was that I was a dreamer. And it was just, I didn't go around talking about, I have this dream and I'm a dreamer and what do you want to dream and all of that. But it was just a part of who I was. It was a force within me. And about 10 years before I started working and developing workshops for Live Your Dream, I started keeping a personal journal. And I attribute my awakening to getting to know myself. And through the journaling and through the, all the different kinds of techniques that you can use, I just really embraced the total me. And that total me was that dreamer that was, in a sense, reawakened. And I knew I had a big dream.
Well, Joyce, do you think just the word dream, in a sense, kinda is a bad word? Because I don't know, maybe you think of the word differently than I do, so you can help reprogram me. But when we say dream, I sort of think of something that we aspire to, but we never really believe we'll actually get it. Do you think that's common?
Oh, very common. And I love that you asked that, because I do have this conversation with people from time to time, and it's like, well, I could use vision. Would that be better? I could use the word goal. But the truth for me is dream. That's the word I choose. And when I first submitted my proposal for my book, they wondered if that was going to be a good title, Live Your Dream. And I went, it's got to be the title, because that was what was true for me.
Well, because vision and goal seem so clinical, too. It seems like something you achieve at work as opposed to what you live to do.
Well, it's it really is. Of course you have to set goals, and of course you have to, make a to-do list and all of that good stuff. But the thing that I love about dream is it takes you out of it. Let's use the word magic. It puts you into the magic of being all of who you can be.
Right. Well,
I don't know. If I was this, then maybe I can magically reach that.
Well, I don't know if, some people that I know who talk about, doing magic, it's focused intention, So what is focused intention? I mean, that's certainly goal setting in a sense. It's putting all your energy into a certain direction. So really it is magic, at least as far as I'm concerned.
It is magic because we get up, we do the things that we have to do, and if we shift our energy towards, I get to be here, I get to accomplish whatever I choose to accomplish, and shift that energy all the time, minute by minute, into I can make a difference.
Asking you, Joyce, when you started using your technique that you developed, and I guess I want to know a little bit about how you discovered the technique, but what were some of the dreams you accomplished so that you knew you had a good method here?
I think the first one, and it wasn't conscious at the time, is that I never gave up finishing my college education, even though I got married young and I had four kids, and I just kept going to school. And I just kept, it took me 13 years from beginning to end to have my teaching, well, to get my degree and then to go on to teaching. And so it was like I'm a very determined person. And I'm a very committed person. And I knew all those things about me. But then I realized, you know, if I can do that, and I think a lot of us say this all the time, if I can do that, then I can do this.
So what are the things that stand in our way? Do we let ourselves get too distracted, or do we talk ourselves out of it? Or, I mean, I don't know if I'm asking the questions in the right order here, but that's, you know, that's sort of what came to mind. How do we sabotage ourselves?
big time, we sabotage ourselves, and a lot of it is because of our social programming. And you know, your question to go back to the dream. You know, it's almost like, and I'll be facetious here a little bit, but it's a kind of a dirty word. You know, it's like, I don't want to call myself a dreamer. And it's a negative rather than a positive.
Well, you sound like a flake. You know, I think people think you're a flake.
That's what people do. They go, she's just a dreamer, you know. she has this idea. And then you look at all the people that have left their mark. I get excited about this. You look at all the people that have left their mark, and guess what? They were all dreamers. And they didn't let society say, you know, you can't do that. You know, you have to be taller, thinner, a different sex, you know, have more money, have less money, you know, whatever society puts on us. And we just have to, well, I say step out of the ordinary into the extraordinary.
Well, you know, that takes a lot of confidence in yourself. You know, I'm thinking about a long time ago, I heard Burt Reynolds and Clint Eastwood both say Hollywood told them they would never be anybody. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I know Burt Reynolds isn't a big star anymore, but he sure made a lot of money, and Clint Eastwood's made a lot of money, and they just stuck to it.
And you really can never, you know, there's a famous quote by Winston Churchill that is like one of my favorites, and it really is never, never, never give up.
Okay.
You know, and if you put that on your front door that you open every day, it's like, oh, okay, I can't give up today. You know, even though something might have just happened that could let you give up. So, and that's such a perfect example to use, you know, the stars, Clint Eastwood and Burt Reynolds, because they did accomplish great things.
Well, now, do you think this is harder for women, because women tend to put everybody else before themselves?
You know, I have, that'd be another show. I have a real, I have fun with this, because I really don't think it's about male and female. I do think it's about energy, though. And I do think that our society, once again, has put, you know, women in a different mold than men. I don't think, I have three sons, so it makes it easy for me to say, you know, my three sons are incredibly spiritual, incredibly intuitive, you know, and all those things that sometimes are labeled female, you know, or more female than male.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, well, I think it all depends on what you allow to be, you know, part of who you are. So, yes, I think it's definitely different for women than men. However, as I know that I feel that you know, is that this is changing. You know, that it could be, you know, we could see it as a slow change. But look at some of the women who have left their mark.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
I just watched the movie Amelia Earhart, and it was just like, I'm going to have to watch that movie again because it was so inspiring. She absolutely did not let anyone stop her dream.
Well, and you know, and there are a lot of, and look, I have had a lot of women friends. I don't know if you've ever heard that analogy about the lobsters in the pot, and they want to, you know, pull the lobster that's climbing out of the pot back down into the boiling water. You know, a lot of times there's not a lot of support out there for you to achieve your dreams, because sometimes the people around you, you know, they don't want you to, because they aren't.
That's a huge part of all of this work that I do. And I call it, sometimes people will say, you know, you have to have a lot of courage to live your dream. And I go, no, you have to, and I say it, and maybe I said this to you, Karen, no, you have to have a lot of clarity.
Yes.
Because I feel that it's important that you have that focus. And won't it be exciting that maybe we awaken 10 women that are listening to the show today to say, you know what, I'm going to do it.
Well, you know, we've been sort of talking around this, but let's sort of get down to, you know, the specifics, or, you know, forgive me, I'm a Virgo, I like lists.
I'm a Sagittarian and I don't.
Uh-oh. All right, well, I'll have to keep your feet to the fire here.
No,
number
I'm a
one.
List, I'm a list maker, Karen.
I know it sounds simple, but you know what? I don't think it's as simple as it might sound, you know, to live your dream. Because, you know, when you and I talked before the Oprah thing, I thought I had clarity, and I really didn't. You know, so let's just start at the beginning and maybe go through the steps with a little explanation of each.
I'd like to do that.
Okay. So where do we begin?
You want me to begin?
Oh, yeah.
Wait, one of the things I love to say in my coaching is, okay, tag, you're it. I'm it, okay. As you probably already gathered and already know, too, it's like, let's have fun. Let's be playful. Because it is going to take work, quote-unquote work, you know. And I think the most important first step is to define your dream. And that is the first chapter in the book, and the questions that I ask in the first workshop that I ever gave, because I feel that that will free a person up to, you know, what the direction, not unlike planning a trip, you know, I'm going to go to Paris, and so, you know where you're going. So it's like, define your destination, you know, what is my dream? The good news is that you can change it at any time.
Well, do you have to be real specific, you think? I mean, because you're saying define the destination. Can it be general?
Yes, I don't think it has to be like, I want to be a writer. You know, I dream of being a best-selling author. Some people have that. Some people have that absolute knowingness. Not everybody does. So I encourage people to just begin. You know, as simple as that might sound, just begin. You know, dare to open, as I said earlier on, dare to open that door. You know, I do want to be a writer, you know, a person says. Of course, you can imagine I meet wonderful people that share their dreams with me. It's like, I do want to be a writer, Joyce. How can I start? You know, and I go, okay, how can we start? And then teasing you, well, let's make a list.
what if you're afraid? I mean, what if when you actually start to get clarity, you realize you're scared to death?
I think a lot of people get, maybe not scared to death, but they definitely have fear. And that voice comes in like, who do you think you are? Those voices, that, you know, those phrases that maybe you heard. And we talked about the fact that maybe women have it a little bit louder than men do. And I do believe that's true most of the time. However, it's all those wonderful ideas about, you know, going to the edge of the cliff and taking a leap, and, you know, and your wings will appear if it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And I love inspirational thoughts and quotes and books about the you know, all those kinds of things that take me out of all of the problem-solving ideas that will occur and just get free from that all the time. I think one of the most important questions to ask oneself is, what brings me joy?
So we want to make sure this dream is our passion, something that brings us joy, even if we think we can't attain it. We, you know, we should write it down anyway.
We should, yeah, absolutely, write it down anyway. And tell, and I say a trusted dreamer friend is the way I put it. Tell a trusted dreamer friend. That, of course, can sometimes be a challenge too, and we can talk about that in a minute. But then you've claimed it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I feel very, I like the word, you know, claim. You've claimed it. It's like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I once heard an interview with Steven Spielberg, since we're talking about famous people and actors, and they asked him a question that, you know, why do you think you do what you do? Something like that. It was many, many years ago. And he said, oh, it's in my DNA. And I just love that.
so he meant that was who he was.
Yeah, he was meant to do what he's doing. Yeah,
okay.
And I absolutely, 100%, there's no doubt in my mind after doing this work for all these years that we do all know. But very few ask.
Wait, say that again.
We all know what's in our DNA.
Okay.
We all know what we're here to achieve. We all know. Now, I don't mean we can, you know, the words will come right out of your mouth, but in the natural knowing self, that inner guide that's in there does know. So be clear enough to say, okay, if I only had this one life to live, you know, tongue in cheek when I say that, but, you know, if I only had this one life to live, what is it I want to achieve? What kind of mark do I want to leave? And it doesn't have to be huge, but the bigger it is, the more stretching you will do. You know,
okay.
Giving your name for, you know, for the Oprah, that was huge.
It doesn't feel so big now.
Well, it was just huge, but with 600,000, did you say? You know,
uh-huh.
oh my gosh, what's next? You know.
Well, you know, I have to reassess the dream now.
Well, and that's what happens. You know.
Well, and you know, Joyce, I have to say, just, you know, and I'm so glad you're on again, because, you know, you're like rekindling this in me. It's like the first trip I took, you know. Believe it or not, the first trip I took wasn't just a little bitty trip. I actually went to Egypt, okay? So the first time I leave the country, I make this huge leap. But you know what? That made me realize I could go anywhere or do anything. It liberated me in such a way that it made me feel things were possible that I might not have thought were possible before. And honestly, doing the Oprah interview did the same thing. I will be more courageous in the next leap, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And it's like, okay, I to have fun with it, Karen, okay, I survived that. You know, because we think that we can't try something new, and maybe we weren't programmed. And I know that's one of the things that I was blessed with. I was programmed to believe that I could really do anything I wanted to do. But if a person wasn't programmed, then, you know, that's why I said get several trusted people around you that can not cheer you in a false way, but really encourage you and empower you. Fix your dinner if that helps you to get something done. You know, just things like that to just
mm-hmm.
really, 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 I love the word empower, really empower you.
And right, and to genuinely support you
genuinely,
and believe in you.
Genuinely. And you, of course, then give that back to that person as well, you know. It's
well,
like,
and I
if
think
you believe
that's
it, I believe it. That's how I see it sometimes, you know, when I'm working in a group or with a client. It's like, if you believe it, I believe it. And guess what? This is the fun part of coaching, too. It's like, guess what? If we find out that isn't it, we'll change.
Right.
And
you know what, Joyce, I'm going to throw this in here because, you know, I have known a lot of people over the last 20 years within the Goddess Spirituality movement. Some people have been so incredibly supportive, which has helped me grow by leaps and bounds. And some people have been so stifling and made me afraid to even use my voice. So I guess I would just like to say here, you know, just to punctuate what you said, make sure these people around you are really supportive. And you know, because it can make the difference if you grow or if you shrink.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's a beautiful way to put it. You know, it's like there was another W.C. Fields was, they did a clip of a film that he did, which he would plant, he planted some seeds, this is a quick story, planted some seeds, and then he would go outside every morning and say, "Grow, damn you, grow," pounding the earth. And I still have that image, you know, it's like, that's so funny, because that's often what we do.
Yeah.
Instead of lovingly and tenderly nurturing the thought, the seed, the idea, we, you know, we give up on it, we pound it, we bring in people, which of course you and I know are our teachers,
mm-hmm.
that open up, you know, maybe a new thing for us. And so,
right.
Okay. And it is about growth, 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 growth.
So what then next? What's the next step?
Well, after you've defined your dream, and that we've already talked about this, but I feel it's very vital, is to surround yourself with other dreamers.
Okay.
You know, put yourself in environments that are going to nurture you. Put yourself around things that are going to feed that new you, so to speak, new, quote unquote, the spirit you. And, you know, I love to say, what is the essence that I want? You know, do I want to be surrounded, and this sounds a little esoteric, but do I want to be surrounded by white light wherever I go? Yes, I do. Well, then I'm going to bring that with me.
And you mean your entourage, so
absolutely.
To speak, your friends
gonna,
and supporters.
Yeah. And it's just, I'm going to create my reality. And by creating that reality, guess what?
You recreate yourself.
Absolutely, over and over and over and over. And I call a lot of the times, too, it's like you talked a little bit earlier about, you know, taking, I don't know how you put it, Karen, but I say, you know, taking the next step. And I say, take the next dream step. You know, and then once again, using that word dream to, you know, make sure you're on the path, because we all have responsibilities. And, you know, that kind of real-world responsibilities kind of thing. But if we keep going towards the dream, it's just, it's freeing. It's lighter. It's more nurturing. When you go to bed at night, you feel more complete. When you wake up in the morning, you're more excited. You know, I'm getting older, but I really think I'm one of the youngest people that I know. You know, it's like because I revitalize myself all the time.
And well, and you say clear away obstructions, like what? Well, I mean, maybe I'm not sure if we talked about this thoroughly enough yet. But what would be obstructions? I mean, like what if you're a mother with two kids and you wanna do something that you just can't do because you got two kids or something like that? Is that what you mean by obstructions, or are you talking about more psychological obstructions?
Well, it can be both. It is both. You know, a lot of times it is our mindset, you know, that stops us rather than, you know, having to feed the kids that stops us. And having had children, I can really relate to that question, because it's like, you know what? If you ask them to join you, they'll join you. You know, let's all go to the library.
Right.
And, you know, and then you give as much to them as they give to you. And it turns out to be more of a journey that, you know, that you're having fun together rather than, oh, my gosh, we have to go, you know, pick up the cleaning or, you know, whatever it is. So it's all kinds of real-world obstructions that I talk about. And I know one of the questions that I like to ask, what's standing in, you know, if you want to, Karen, we can play, what's standing in your way?
Well, I know for me it's usually myself. You know, you taught me that. You know, I remember I told you that a psychic said to me, you know, Karen, you could do so much more if you just got out of your own way. And I said, Joyce, what does that mean?
What wise thing did I say back to you?
Well, and then you made me start talking about what I do or what I don't do, and I realized I was just making up excuses for myself. Other people are smarter or prettier or younger or thinner, you know, all of those things we tell ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, you know, that is getting in your own way. And it's, and one of the, one reason, and I think you join me in this, is I like to look at people who are accomplished, quote-unquote accomplished, because you really do know that they've gone through, you know, whatever they've had to go through to get where they are. I always love when, you watch the award shows and they'll say, well, it only took 16 years to make this film. You know, and I'm just sitting there totally loving hearing that, because as a person who loves to dream and as a dream coach, it's like, that's to me the message that everybody out here can pay attention to. You may not be an overnight success, you know. You may not get the show on Oprah this time, but you're going in that direction.
Right. And I really think you can't give up the first time you hit a wall. I mean, I know with my first book, I probably had 15 or 16 rejection letters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's hard to take. you just have to be tenacious and committed and determined.
You do, and you have to have. And you mentioned earlier on, and I couldn't agree with you more, that it's confidence, you know.
Yeah.
But what brings that confidence is those step by steps that you take. You know.
Yeah.
I made it to that, so I probably can make it to this.
Yes. Yes. Well, and I think, too, I don't know whether this is, I haven't had a chance to read the whole book yet, but do you have a section or talk at all about, you know, the people that try to tear you down along the way, in some sense where, you know, they'll say, oh, something you did was valueless or something, you know?
That is a big part of, you know, stepping away, not even stepping out, but stepping away from all of those naysayers, all those people that have all the reasons you can't. And a lot of times, and this is always like almost, I touched my heart when I started to say it to you, it's almost heart-wrenching for me, it's somebody close to you.
Oh, our mothers, you know? I think, sometimes.
Yeah, it's somebody close to you saying, who do you think you are?
Uh-huh.
And if you do have that confidence, and if you do have, you know, that inner strength that hopefully, you know, you're working on toward and working towards, you can say, I am a person who wants to live her dream.
Right, right. And there's nothing wrong with that, so don't make me feel guilty.
And you know what? I've never questioned you, you know, which is often the case, too. You know, I work with a lot of people who are in relationships, you know, and couples, and it's like, well, and say it was a woman that said, you know, well, my husband's not going to like me doing this.
Uh-huh. And yeah, it's hard.
If it's person to person, I'll probably smile at her and say, oh, really? Then what are we going to do about that?
Right. Well, when I applied for the Oprah audition, I was reading the requirements to my husband, and I said, Roy, you know, that's my husband, Roy. I said, you know, if by some chance, you know, I get picked or something, you have to be available to go to any city they call you to for 6 weeks. And he sort of gulped. And because, you know, he's the one that always says, oh, Karen, if you are away too long, let it turn into a hairball in the corner, you know. And he says, I'll do it, honey. I'll manage. Just do it. You know, just go ahead. I'll get through the 6 weeks. If you got to be gone, I'll do it. You know, but I can imagine that some women or men may run up against a spouse who maybe is afraid that if you achieve your goals, you're going to leave them behind or something.
Oh, absolutely, and it's a real life happening. You know, if somebody decides to be all of who they are, if somebody decides to live their dream, if somebody decides to write that book or go on a talk show, it could be challenging in their personal life. And that's where it helps to reach out to some experts. And yes, I am an expert, and yes, there are other people that are too, but I really believe that it's important to reach out for help.
So how can you help somebody who reaches out to you like that?
Listen to them first. Find out what it is that's the real fear, which is, you know, I'm going to be very honest with you. I know we're live, but very honest with you, sometimes that's very challenging. You know,
sure.
They want to run out of the office, run out of the place, because it's like, I don't want you to ask me that question.
But, well, they probably don't even want to face it themselves.
Well, they may have never asked it of themselves.
Right.
And that's where, you know, I call it an expert, because that's where an expert can really assist. Because they're standing back looking at you, going, here's a beautiful human being. Why aren't they going to go for it?
Well, I want to tell my listeners, you are good at this, because you dug deep into me, lady.
Well, can we tell them what you wrote in the front of the book you sent me? I just love it.
Sure, sure.
I'll read it. To my fairy godmother, Joyce. I just loved it, because we did have a good connection. And I do think that that's very important. But I'm real sincere when I say, you know, reach out to other people to assist you. I'm a reader. I love to read. So if I don't know something, I'll go and get a book. You know, that's just my style. And so I encourage people, hey, if you don't know how to do that, you know, let's find out how to do that.
Right, right. Well, yeah, because, I mean, in this day and age, you can find out how to do most anything.
Oh, my gosh. Can you believe what Google has done?
Yeah, absolutely. We used to have to run to the library. Now we just Google it, you know.
I know, and it's a wonderful tool. And it's like, okay, you know, we talked, you said, and I was so happy to hear you say excuses, because that's a, you know, all the word letters in capitals, because so many people use excuses. And I have fun with people that allow me to do that. It's like, is that an excuse? You know, and we'll laugh and say, well, yes, well, okay.
But, you know, I know for myself, I didn't see them as I guess I saw them as excuses, but I didn't. I don't know. It's hard to language it. If they felt like real obstacles, and then when you sort of minimize them by saying you're just making excuses, well, then they seem surmountable. You know, they don't seem so big then, I think.
And then that's the aspect, as you mentioned, of clearing it away.
Yeah,
clearing it away. You know, I often, in my mind, just say, okay, when you're going to build a new house, you have to clear the land.
Mm.
You know,
yep.
And I get quick flashes like that. It's like, oh, okay, then I'm going to have to clear this out. If you want to have a new wardrobe, you're going to have to clean your closet, you know.
Right, right.
Or, well, you don't have to, but it might be a wise choice.
Yeah.
To clear that space and, you know, to fill the void.
Well, and, you know, it's so funny. You're using terminology that women within goddess spirituality actually use to pray to goddess. You know, they'll talk about in a ritual, you know, before you start the ritual, you have to purify the space.
Beautiful.
You know, or before a party, you clean the house. You know, it's just kind of a common sense thing. And then, you know, and then when you clean stuff out, you call in positive stuff to take the place.
Mm-hmm.
So you really are talking steps of magic. You know, I don't know whether you're aware of it, but I'm just connecting those dots for you.
Well, I'm so glad you are, because I don't have a lot of knowledge about your field. I've read pretty extensively, and I just, it's one of the areas, and I'm going to say subjects, that I just accept as true.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I just like, well, of course that's so.
Well, and, you know, and I wanted to tell you, too, you know, if you ever run into a woman who needs a goddess archetype for personal empowerment and tenacity, it's the lion-headed Egyptian goddess Sekhmet. We call her the Lady of Tenacity Manifested, you know, and you think about what a lioness does, you know. And so anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out in case you run into a goddess woman who needs a archetype.
That's beautiful, and I love that, because it is like, you know, I use, you know, kind of more, I'm going to use this and put it in quotes, but real world kind of language, because you do have to, I keep the doors open, you know, and I know that sometimes if you talk about astrology or psychic energy, some people run, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm more mainstream than you know, some, but guess what? I love psychics, I love astrology, I love, you know, everything about reincarnation. And so I think that it's very important that, you know, a person meets with a person that can use the language.
Right,
you know.
Right, yeah, because you're talking their language. Well, now you also say here one of the steps besides having a winning attitude is taking inventory and taking charge. Believe it or not, we only have 15 minutes left. We've been talking almost an hour already.
It's so fun.
I know. Maybe I'll have to have you back. But
I probably would love that.
Okay. Well, you are my fairy godmother. I enjoy talking to you. but you know, for the sake of my listeners who don't have your book like I do right in front of me, what does that mean, taking inventory and taking charge?
Well, I think that's probably, and I believe that I mentioned something very early on, because I do believe that we have to know ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, you know, I fully embrace that until a person really knows themselves,
mm-hmm.
they can fall into those traps. That, like, well, maybe I can't do it, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's too risky. Maybe I won't earn enough money. You know, all those real world kinds of things that come in. And so by taking that self-inventory and to really getting to know yourself, you know, I think one of the most valuable exercises I ever did in my life was to ask myself, what do I value? And, you know, and then just, I do this with pen and paper because it's like, okay, let me just have fun and put down what I value, you know. And one of the things that popped into my mind right away, I'm going to use myself as an example because it was like so life-changing for me, because I realized one of my top values is self-expression. You know, don't put Joyce in a room where she can't talk. don't tell Joyce she can't teach. You know, don't tell Joyce she can't create because you know, creativity is like one of my top values, and of course, you know, integrity and honesty. And as a person looks at those values, you can be congruent. And that is, you know, ask me a question if that doesn't make sense, but it's so vital to be congruent. Most people around you know what your values are. You know, like if you ask Roy,
mm-hmm.
honey, what do I value? He might, you know, and if he isn't right on, it will be fun to, you know, share with maybe, you know, and it could
Wait,
be.
How you're perceived by the outside world.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, and now part of this is, I mean, there shouldn't be any reason why you shouldn't say, for instance, I want to do such and such and make a lot of money at it, too.
Okay.
I mean,
and you may have read this in the book, my first dream statement was I want to be rich and famous. And it was just so fun. I'd seen a highway sign. I'm not even sure they have highway signs anymore. And it was something like, dare to be rich and famous. And I went, that's what I have. That's what I want. You know, I think making money is a part of it and it's joyful. And then you can give back. And, you know, I don't think money is not a dirty word with me, or being financially abundant is, you know, fits in with being, look at the millions, you know, of that millions of dollars that movies are making now.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars that, you know, top artists are making now. It's like there's something to pay attention to there.
Well, and you say dare to stretch and expand. So we have to challenge ourselves, maybe get out of our comfort zone. Is that what you mean?
Most of the time. Most of the time we have to get out of our comfort zone. And that's, I call it shaking yourself up. You know, it's like if you've never made a phone call like that, make one today. If you've never sent an agent a letter and that's what you want to do, write that letter today. You really won't die.
And you know what? You'll feel so good after you did it. You'll go, you know what? That wasn't so hard.
And so many times when it's over, you'll go, what was I so afraid of?
Well, but you know, Joyce, I think we have to be realistic too, because I mean, sometimes we're, you know, can I say we're going to fail, and then we have to pick ourselves up, right?
Oh yeah, no, I think we do, and you know, and I've done it several times tonight because I do feel it's very important to, like, you know, put the word fail in italics, sort of, because they really aren't. It's not really failure. You really have learned something.
That's true.
You know, one of the things that I go I harp on. What am I learning?
Right.
No. And I one of the questions that I love working with my clients and with my friends and people who really want me in their life, and I'll go, how is that perfect?
Well, you know, one of my girlfriends who I confide in, you know, women, when, you know, we have these things and we talk to one another, and she says, Karen, how many times do I have to tell you there is a gift in everything? Let's look at this. Where's the gift? And we always come up with one.
Well, I know it. And it's like, and it sounds like you might have the same fun that I do. It's like, oh, shoot. I knew there was a gift. I just couldn't see it.
Yeah. Yes, it's like that old silver lining in the cloud, like our mother used to say.
Absolutely, and I heard that one as I was growing up. It's like, look for silver lining. My grandmother used to say that to me. She would say, look for the silver lining, Joyce.
Well, and now, is that what you mean when you say keep the dream alive?
Keep the dream alive.
I mean, is it, you know, does that mean even if we fail, keep trying, or even, you know, to keep focused on it every day, every day, every day?
And reframe, you know, even your notion about failure. Oh, okay, that had to happen in order for this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. That was just a step, and I thought it was going to be, you know, it was going to end up that it was all going to happen. No, it was just a step. You know, because you've written books, and because I think, you know, writing books is a good example of staying with a dream, is that you just keep going.
Yeah.
The Live Your Dream book was accepted at a major, major publisher, and the person said, we like it, we'll publish it, but double the size. I'll never forget that moment as long as I live. And I went, okay, hung up the phone, and started working on doubling the size. It needed more meat, so to speak, you know.
You had to be more detailed.
Had to be more detailed. I mean, I knew what the message was, but I guess they didn't think my readers were going to be. And that didn't turn out to be my final publisher, but it was like, it was. But I could have seen that as failure.
Right.
And of course.
Right. Well, yeah, you could have taken it as, you know, we're tender creatures,
oh,
you know.
Yeah. No,
I mean, you could have taken it as, well, it's not good enough the way it is. But you didn't. You just said, okay, I'm going to put more of my valuable wisdom on these pages.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I did. And I think that, as I say, I keep using myself as an example because I'm the person that I know the best. And, of course, I have confidentiality with my clients. But one of the things that I realized, and it was along with the values, that I'm a very sensitive person. I can be very vulnerable. But I know now that's a strength.
Explain that.
Because by being sensitive, I'll really hear your pain.
Ah.
I'll hear your sorrow. I'll hear that your doubts, and I'll join with you, and that's, wouldn't it be a beautiful world if everybody joined with us and held each other's hand, so to speak, and, you know, take the next step.
Mm, that's beautiful.
It matters to me. It matters to me, and I had to find that out about myself. You know, instead of beating myself up with, you know, you care too much, or you're too sensitive, or why are you crying?
Like, right.
Because that's who I am.
Right, right.
That is who I am.
And to borrow Joyce,
Peter Silberg, you know, it is in my DNA.
Well, Joyce, let's talk about where we can find your book, first of all. We have like 8 minutes left, so I want to make time just flew. So it's Live Your Dream, the second edition, Discover and Achieve Your Life Purpose, a step-by-step program. So we didn't actually get a chance to go through all the steps, but if you get the book, trust me, listeners, you can, it's like a workbook.
Well, it actually, Karen, I didn't send you at all, it actually has a companion workbook.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll make it even easier.
Well, it is easier because it really does take a person the load off of, like, oh, my gosh, how do I do this? And the workbook came out 2 years after the book did because I got comments like, why don't you make a workbook for us? So my publisher graciously said, okay, let's make a workbook, and we did it, you know. So it does have a workbook, but probably the easiest way in this day and age is to order it through Amazon.com.
All right, and if anyone wanted to reach you, you have a website, JoyceChapman.com.
That's correct, and I think you know this already. I love to, you know, empower people. I love to coach people. I love to be there. You can ask me anything. I will respond.
Well, I want my listeners to call you, because when I wrote in that book, You Are My Fairy Godmother, that's how I felt sincerely in my deepest heart when I got off the phone with you. I really felt like you cared about me more than many people in many moons, and you're wonderful. You are wonderful.
Thank you. I'll accept that. And I absolutely love what you do, too. And I did want to say this to you, and I hope it's not inappropriate, but I had somebody I care about a lot watch your video, you know, and vote for you 5 times you did.
Thank you.
That is a really beautifully well-spoken lady.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I thought, you know, but I know you got lots of comments, because I went on to check, and it was just like, wow, this is so, if I'm overusing the word empowering, I am, you know, it's like, but it was so empowering to see the support and the love and, you know, the belief, and you can do this.
Yes. Well, you know, honestly, you're absolutely right. I mean, even though it goes back to your idea of fail, I don't feel like I failed because chosen for this. You know, this particular thing, I mean, this was wonderful for my self-esteem. I think it was wonderful for the community to participate in. You know, it's just on so many levels, you know, and I feel like I can, you know, I feel like I could, you know, sit in a room with Oprah and hold my own.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. And if you doubt it, will you call me up and I'll tell you?
I sure will.
Don't be silly. Of course you can. And, you know, people have asked me too, have you, you know, would you like to be on Oprah? Of course I'd like to be on Oprah. But, you know, what motivates me to say that, more than, you know, wanting to be on Oprah to sell books and that kind of wonderful stuff, is that I really have passion with awakening people to be all of who they are.
Yes.
And if
yes.
I can get, you know, 25 people today to say, hey, you know what, I do have a dream.
Well, Joyce, do you by any chance, maybe you do this already, and I'm going to have to make this quick because we've got 4 minutes, but do you do like online classes or webinars or anything like that?
No, I used to do, live workshops. I have never done online classes, and I've thought about it. I do offer a home study program through, you know, that all the information's on my website. It was probably the easiest thing for somebody to do. And you can always write to me and, you know, arrange for a free phone call, and, you know, we can talk about it. The home study program is very good because, as it says on the front of my book, and you said several times tonight, it is a step-by-step program. And I do believe that it's important to go through all the steps, you know.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to go back and clean up stuff. Oh, sure, you're going to have something tomorrow happen that you wish didn't happen. But you could pick yourself up quickly when you know, hey, that's not who I am.
Well, Joyce, I have to tell you, after one phone call with you, you changed me. I mean, that quickly. And I hadn't even gone through all the steps and read the book yet. So I can't say enough about you and your program here. And I hope my listeners know that I am, you know, I mean that from the bottom of my heart. They have to get your book. You know, if they're struggling and stumbling, or just if they need a fairy godmother, it's Joyce Chapman.
I'll accept that. Well, one of the things, Karen, if we run out of time, will cut me off, but it's just like I tell people with a smile, you know, if I'm one-on-one with them or seeing them, I'll go, you know, really, if you bought my book, you'd find out for yourself how to do this. And I'm not being sarcastic, because the book is well developed.
Yes.
Step-by-step programs are step-by-step, and you will be in a different place if you do, when I say if you do the work. And it does take time, and it does take energy.
Well, and it's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth it. Well, Joyce, thank you so very much for, you know, taking the time to, you know, share some of these steps with the listeners. Thank you for the time you dedicated to me. You lady have made a difference in my life. And, you know, you were a gift from Goddess to me, and I mean that. I really do. Thank you.
It's beautiful that you framed it that way for me. Thank you very much. I'm going to align with the Goddess in me.
Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you.
We're gonna have to say good night.
Good night.
Yeah, that was Blog Talk saying 90 seconds left. So we will be in touch. And again, listeners, before you go, it is JoyceChapman.com. So you can find her, and please go out there and find her. So good night, Joyce. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Good night.